everybody. Welcome to another great edition of Talking Tigs, the summer, last day of June edition, coming to you on a Sunday. Not too much going on, but still enough to talk about. Going to give you guys a quick review, a second quarter review, as it were, since we are dedicated to our listeners. I'm Scott Girard. Joining me, as always, Tommy Johnson, Daniel Zollinger. Hope you guys have had a good week off since we're now on our bi-weekly schedule. Man, it's kind of boring. Well, I mean, we had we had the NBA Finals and the NHL Finals, College World Series Finals, but all that's over. So now there's just crickets, right? I mean, there's some football news trickling out. There's the baseball portal, but it's really the doldrums of like sports news.
Yeah, I mean, especially on the college front, I mean, everybody's kind of out of the way and getting ready for fall camp is, you know, the closest thing we have as far as sports go. But once they crown a champion in Omaha, everything kind of shuts down for collegiate level. So a little bit slower, a little, you know, time to catch your breath a little bit, maybe enjoy you know, other activities. Midseason baseball is kind of, you know, it's here and kind of fun.
It's about pro to be baseball, hurricane, I mean, season. There's already one.
Yeah, but hurricane season, that's true. I saw there's one in the Gulf right now. So there's certain things to, I don't know if you look forward to that, but certain things to look at.
Right.
Yeah, we're doing well. Good to be back after a kind of a long 2 weeks off. Reset. I was in Louisiana for a few days for business and not for pleasure, but that was a good time. And yeah, I mean, the LSU news hasn't been super steady, but we got a few tidbits here on the baseball and football fronts. And then on the other sports, I guess the Olympics are coming up here. I know there's some LSU or former LSU athletes out there trying to qualify as we speak. And then they got the big soccer tournaments, Euros and the Copa America, but that's not really our focus on the pod. But yeah, definitely stuff out there, and always fun to get the crew back together to record.
Absolutely, and it's really fun to talk about just LSU stuff that is just kind of highlights the fact that we are truly like a college baseball blue blood. Okay. There's no disputing that. By the way, just to go over a few things, I mean, I know there's the College World Series. We'll get into that. Don't worry. But more important news first, LSU actually finished with the pitching, the squad with the most strikeouts for this past year. In the nation, we led the nation with 733, which is amazing. It's like we were complaining about, you know, pitching here and there in certain spots, but little did we know. We had a bunch of aces on our staff.
That like really surprises me. And
yeah,
makes
flew
me
under the
wonder,
radar
like,
a little
where,
bit.
Where yeah. was that? Like, what did that, how did that happen? And why?
I don't know. It was mostly Luke Holman and, you know, some guys that had some really good performances late in the year, obviously, but you know, just here and there, I guess. I mean, that's how we.
Yes.
I think the problem was that there was a lot of strikeouts, but there was a lot of hits and walks in between the strikeouts.
Yeah, it's like any time. It's like every time we recorded an out, it was like a strikeout, but then in between that, yeah, maybe it was just everything else.
And the more
we did walk a lot of people this year, if I remember correctly.
We did, but whatever that record is. You know, we can look it up, but as far as the strikeouts go, think about it. We didn't even make it to super regionals.
Yeah.
So we outlasted everyone that went all those dozens of extra games. So that's amazing. LSU has still the number one, or they got the most home runs in a season with 188 going back to the Gorilla Bowl. Tennessee was challenging it. They came close. They came within like a few of like four or five. It looked like, you know, if they'd have gone on a tear in game two or three of the College World Series, they probably could have touched it, but they didn't. So that one's safe for now. There was one other too. I forget what it was, but anyway, I mean, that's enough to go on for now. And
as far as the World Series, yeah, Tennessee, they snuck up on the home run record. They finished with 184 to the LSU's 188 for the record. But yeah, Tennessee taking down the World Series, continuing the SEC's dominance in Omaha over the past 5+ years. And they're pretty deserving of the team, really solid baseball team, top to bottom, at or near number one for the entire season. They smoked us when we played them. Yeah, Vitello's got them in a good place, and I'm sure they'll be continuing for the next couple of years. A&M had a good World Series as well, and they were close within one run at the very end, but it kind of seemed like Tennessee's to lose.
Yeah, I mean, especially with the way that Game 3 went, Tennessee was up big and kind of literally started to throw the game away. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was pass ball, walk, all kinds of – I think they walked a run in. I mean, it was kind of coming unhinged for Tennessee. Game one, Tennessee didn't look great. So they really, came together. I think they were the best team in the country the whole year, and showed it in the end. Congrats to them. I really liked watching Christian Moore play. He's a beast of a player. It wasn't smooth sailing for them in that those last two innings
or two games. I mean, they had to win two straight, right? So,
well, yeah,
it was that too. And then, just a lot of crazy fallout afterwards. I mean, yeah, Tennessee kind of came back and won it and proved they were the top team in the country. Now, remains to be seen if they can sustain it. I mean, Tony V's done a pretty good job last few years. I mean, they've made the College World Series, 3 out of 4? So if they can – well, the hard part's getting back, right? But he's staying in place because after that game, the whole coaching carousel just went haywire. Schlossnagel left A&M to go to Texas. A&M was trying to recruit Vitello hard. I mean, they brought the Brinks truck, but he said – no, I'm good. He was probably looking at a meme of one of those Aggies with the hands over their head and their heels in there doing that thing. He's like, I can't.
I don't want to be a part of that.
Yeah, his agent, Jimmy Sexton, is like, I can't do it, Jimmy. I can't see myself. No. All right, so you're staying in Tennessee. Good. That's how I see it went down, honestly.
Yeah,
I felt kind of bad for Tennessee almost because the whole coaching thing overshadowed their championship a little bit. It's kind of the bigger news story. And then the fact that Texas had fired their coach, I think the day or two before the last game of the World Series. And then people were saying that one of these two coaches who's in the finals, they could be the next head coach of Texas tomorrow or very soon. And that ended up being true. The kind of the big moment was after the final game, and they asked Schlossnagel whether he's going to Texas, and he basically said absolutely not, you're a fool and should be criticized for even asking that question. And then less than 24 hours later, the tweets are firing up saying that he's signed on. So not a great look, and then that's caused a few of A&M's players to already hit the portal, which we'll talk about in a minute. But crazy moves, although we've seen similar in the past, both baseball and football. Lincoln Riley to USC, even Brian Kelly to LSU in football. He kind of said he's not going anywhere, and then lo and behold. These things happen, but it is kind of a scumbag move in some sense.
Yeah. Schlossnagel pulled a Saban straight up. He said, I'm not going to be the next head coach at Alabama, and then he just became exactly that. And Schlossnagel, it's like he had to know by then. I heard that they reached out to him before they even – started the College World Series. I mean, who knows when they were talking to him, but it's been going on for weeks, you would have to think. But
I mean, do you think he just decides to leave and take all this money in less than 12 hours? No, he has to have at least had the offer before.
Right.
So,
or a whisper in his ear, just testing the waters. But that's crazy. And he took almost his whole staff with him. Including Nolan Kane, who was he was on staff at LSU for a while. He was actually a reliever on the 09 championship team. So he's going with him. A few other guys are. So A&M's cleaning house. Obviously, they have money to throw around, but there's really like no top guy available. You know, I think they also looked at, what was it? The guy at FSU, I forget his name. He's got a unique name, but he's like, I'm a Knoll. I'm here. There's a guy in Virginia. He's got roots in Charlottesville, so he's not going anywhere. That's about it. I will say that LSU did get somebody back, Josh Simpson, who was on our team the year before. He was the director of operations until he went to Georgia this year. Helped him out tremendously, but we got him back. Welcome back. Let's see what else we can do. I mean, there's obviously some other coaching. I mean, LSU lost a trainer, Brent Herring. He went to Nichols. He's going to be the coach in Nichols now. It's all just one big carousel, especially in Louisiana. It's crazy. But I don't know. I'm sure you guys have seen some of our players that have left. I mean, the staff, whatever. That's always changing. But it shows that losing Wes Johnson wasn't as big a loss as we thought, because our pitching staff, whether we knew it or not, was actually doing pretty good. But now we've lost a lot of players that whose names we've come to know. I don't know. Is there one that you're like, ah, I wasn't expecting that?
Well, it's hard to say exactly one. We've gone over this in the past. I'm sure Jay Johnson is still looking to make a few more additions, especially given the fallout from the Schlossnagel move into Texas, because a few of the players from A&M specifically who played really well in the World Series are now in the portal. The number one guy being Jay Slaviolette, who was actually committed to LSU in high school, yeah, before going over to A&M, and he was a sophomore last year, so he'll have at least one more year of eligibility, and he smacked almost 30 home runs this year and played well in the field also. And then Gavin Grahovac, their third baseman, who we need to replace the third baseman now that Tommy White would be leaving. He had a great season as a true freshman too, so I'm sure Jay Johnson's ringing the phone there in College Station and seeing who's available and what we might want to offer. And there are some more discussions also, because Schlossnagel's contract supposedly is paying about $3 million a year, which sets him as the highest paid baseball coach. And considering that Jay Johnson's basically half that, like $1.5 million, I wonder if he's either asking for a pay raise or saying like, hey man, can y'all put some of this money like towards getting some of these players in the portal and dial up the NIL. So I wouldn't be surprised if he and a few other coaches on the market get a little bump in their salaries too, but it's a cash fueled world out there, and somebody's going to win, hopefully LSU.
Yeah. I mean, I think another player to look at in the portal for A&M, I loved what I saw from Caden Kent throughout this whole postseason. He's got a great pedigree with his dad being Jeff Kent, who I remember watching play for the Giants and the Dodgers when I was a kid. And I mean, they showed him, he was at Omaha. Every time Caden Kent came up to bat, they showed Jeff sitting in the seats. He's an infielder who I think, you know, I would love to see him come to LSU, but I think, like you said, Daniel, Laviolette is kind of the A1 choice, especially with him having a background formerly being committed to LSU. Fits that role that we've had, of kind of the power hitting outfielder, whether it's, you know, Dylan Cruz or what you kind of wanted out of Paxton Kling, who didn't work out, but you know, that role of kind of like the rangy five tool type player who can hit and play a really good outfield position. So hoping we can make a play for him. Also just a FYI, Kling announced where he's going. So he's going to be going back home to Penn State. A little bit of a downgrade for him, but congratulations on a new home.
I bet he'll get some good looks, some good playing time there.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you one accomplishment from Big Ten baseball. I mean,
I think the last like good Big Ten baseball team that I can, wasn't Ohio State decent like maybe 3 or 4 years ago?
I don't know. Their coach just left to become an assistant somewhere else.
So true.
I don't know. I remember Indiana, I think, did okay a few years ago. I mean, we got Indiana State was pretty good too. But No, I seriously, I couldn't tell you anything. But it doesn't matter. Good for him. I mean, you know, these guys come and go. At least we got a guy from Nicholls State, Jacob Myers, did pretty well. I've had some other guys. I mean, LSU's got the beat on some really good recruits also. But, I mean, if they're going to go to the – they're going to get drafted in the pros, it's like how much can you count on that? I mean, you know, some people do come back, you know, Cam Johnson, but doesn't mean anything. You know, it's – unfortunately, it doesn't – I mean, sometimes it can, but it doesn't always.
Yeah.
But I don't know. There was also I think – no, that was it for – I think that was pretty much it for baseball.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so we'll see how the fallout of all that goes. Some of these players may end up following Schlossnagel to Texas or going elsewhere, and A&M will have to fill in their gaps as well. But, yeah, certainly exciting. And then kind of speaking of Texas, tomorrow, July 1st, is when Texas and Oklahoma officially join the SEC. So that's kind of something interesting. I don't know that anything really happens, but that's just the official date.
Interesting. No, I didn't know that. I didn't know that they hadn't officially joined it yet. Like, cause they've been, you know, on TV and everything. Like, I mean, the SEC commercials you're seeing and showing highlights of Red River Shootout and all that kind of stuff. So like, I just figured that it was maybe like a calendar year thing or
yeah, it may have to do with, yeah, it may have to do like the school academic calendar fiscal year, whatever it ends at the end of June or something. But yeah, tomorrow's is the day. So I don't think there's any competitions until football season starts. But yeah, so welcome to the Longhorns and the Sooners for better or worse. Should provide some drama at least.
Yeah.
It's just going to be weird that now that the Red River rivalry is now part of SEC history because it's never been anywhere near it.
No.
Now it is.
Well, that, and then, I mean, one thing that's kind of a positive, I think, for people who just, you know, love the sport, talking college football, really, you know, A&M and Texas haven't played in, like, I think over a decade.
Yeah.
When A&M left the Big 12 to come to the SEC, they stopped being forced to play Texas, and they haven't, and they never scheduled again. And so that was something that, you know, I didn't grow up watching that, but I know it means something, I think, to, you know, to the, like, that is a big, and when, you know, during their heydays, even back before it was the Big 12, I think it was like the Big 8 and, you know, all that, that meant a lot. And, so you'll get to see that again, which could be kind of cool. I think that actually, I think that's going to be their last game of the season. I think we're losing isn't that right? I think we're losing the A&M.
Oh, LSU versus A&M?
Yeah, I think A&M is going to be playing Texas as their last game of the season because the Red River Shootout happens like in September.
So be it. Yeah, let them have it. I really don't care. I could care less about.
We finish the season with Oklahoma November 30th.
Yeah, exactly.
In Baton Rouge. So
I think on that same, I think A&M on that November 30th slot, A&M is playing Texas.
Mm-hmm. So here's a question for y'all, because the last time the SEC made changes was in 2012 when A&M and Missouri joined. So 12 years ago tomorrow, do we think that in 12 years time from now, the SEC will still be the same as it is like with Oklahoma and Texas, or will have changes been made? And then when do we think that might happen?
I'm not confident the SEC will be the same in 4 years.
Like, I was going to say six.
Yeah, I think that the dominoes have already fallen, and we're early in the line of dominoes. I think that, you know, they've looked at adding. People have talked about them adding Florida State and Clemson for a while, then or North Carolina. From what I've heard, they want to expand up kind of the East Coast more. The issue with North Carolina is that North Carolina has said they won't go without Duke. they have to go with Duke because of the basketball, which makes sense. I respect that. I think that it just makes so much sense. I think that Clemson makes sense. I think that Florida State, I don't know. I think that Florida State is lower on my totem pole as far as like being a quality, or not necessarily a quality ad, because it's a great program, you know, from tradition and history and all that. But I don't think the ACC is strong enough to keep these teams. Like if you have a Clemson, if let's say Florida State is as good as they were last year, in the next couple of years, then Clemson is decent, or very good, and then North Carolina is decent. There's going to be an AC, in my view, there's going to be an ACC team that's crowded out by a third or fourth place SEC team because of how strong our conference is. And I think that's going to leave programs in the ACC saying, we had as good a year as X team, Missouri. We'll just take Missouri. And we didn't get the respect that we feel like we deserve. And you know what? If you can't beat them, join them. That's the way I see it.
Yeah. So do we think that expansion is really the only option for the SEC in the future? Because with the addition of Texas and Oklahoma, that takes us to 16. And you mentioned those ACC teams. I mean, 20 is a pretty nice round number if they took four more after that. But is there I don't think I see them giving the boot to anybody, but it's not impossible. I mean, some of the schools are definitely a little bit smaller market. Like you think about maybe Mississippi State or even something like South Carolina or Vanderbilt. But I don't know, like, or, and then there's like the possibility of joining with another conference, especially in football, to make the much discussed mega conference, like 60 team power one conference or whatever. That seems a little bit farther off down the line, but I do think that agree with your take that the pace is accelerating in these conference changes, and it's more likely sooner rather than later. Although there are some issues with the ACC, like grant of rights for the television stuff, and I think that doesn't expire until like 2036, so that's a ways out. But I think there is some buyouts if they were to compile massive funds and get it done. So, and then the SEC is not afraid of that.
That was an issue. That was a big issue with adding Texas. I don't think it was an issue with Oklahoma as much, but I don't know if you saw the news. I think it broke earlier this past week. Remember the Longhorn Network?
Yeah.
I mean, that was a huge deal when they created it. This was pretty soon after when they created it. It was pretty soon after Texas had played Alabama in that 2008 national championship. And so people were thinking, you know, oh, Texas is back on the rise. Colt McCoy had just left, I think, and he had a brother, Case McCoy. So Jordan Shipley had left and he had a brother too. So, you know, there was some continuity and people were thinking, oh man, this might be, you know, this was the first time that maybe we're back. And so they still have that ongoing, or they had that network that had a lot of money invested in it. I think they just announced this past week that they're totally restructuring that. It's going to become basically what LSU Gold is, a streaming service. But there were like legitimate TV right deals with that. I mean, I think that DirecTV or Dish Network or something, like, you would pay and you got Longhorn Network, which is kind of weird.
I didn't ask for it, but I had it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, that's a lot of money. So I want the SEC to you know, answer your question, Daniel. Yeah, I don't think the SEC has a fear of negotiating through these rights deals. They had to do it with Texas and with Oklahoma and with the Big 12, and then I think also with this Longhorn Network thing. What I'm looking at now, how many teams does the Big 10 have now? Now that you've added the California and Oregon,
I think like what? But they have 14 or 16 now because they added USC and UCLA. So
they added USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington. And one other, right?
Yeah.
Washington?
Yeah.
Did they add Stanford?
No, Stanford went to the ACC, which is weird.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Okay, so they're at 16 because before they were the big, they were the Big Ten with 12 teams, and then the Big 12 had 10 teams. So
the Big Ten is at 18 now with the addition of those four.
Okay, 18.
I just counted.
Okay, 18. And we're at what, 14?
Yeah, 14, about to be 16 tomorrow.
So I think that the writing on the wall is college football is going to become the SEC will be the NFC, the Big Ten will be the AFC. They'll battle it out, and you'll see that in the playoff. Like, that's kind of the way I think it is. I think
and
that
then the Pac-12 will be the USFL.
Yes, in that it doesn't exist.
Right. Along with the Mountain West, they will have their own thing.
It's sad. I mean, it's really sad because I love the conferences. I liked how, of course, now, you know, most football is kind of the same, but I always liked how the Pac-10 at the time, back when it was the Pac-10, that was the high flying conference. A lot of, you know, speed ruled that conference. And then SEC was the ground and pound. I thought that was cool. You know, I thought that the Big Ten being the conference where it was like, you know, we're going to line up in like I formation and we still play with a lot of fullbacks and that kind of thing. And it was cold. I like that now, but now it is just going to be much more of an NFL style where geography doesn't matter. Style of play doesn't matter. It's just best teams. And the best teams you can get, you put them into your conference.
Mm-hmm.
I should say it does feel like the SEC has a little bit more, and SEC leadership has a little bit more respect for geography. Because I think that in the same way that the Big Ten went and added Oregon, I think Greg Sankey could have added Oregon if he really wanted to. Mm-hmm. I don't think they would have turned down the SEC.
But, yeah, and I was going to mention as of the conclusion of the College World Series, the PAC anything is now defunct because that was the last sporting event that they operated in.
They don't even exist anymore, which is sad. And remember when the PAC collapsed?
It's Oregon State Oregon State and Washington State are the two that did
alone.
Get
yeah. And so where
did
they
get the bids? I believe they're operating as like attaché members of the Mountain West Conference for this fall in football, and they're like trying to negotiate what they're going to do and hopefully catch a invite from somebody, maybe the Big 12 or who knows, going forward, but they're still kind of like hanging out there in their own transfer portal of sorts.
It's insane. And I think that for those reasons, you know, I that's why I don't think it's over. Like, it does not, I don't feel like we're at a place. It's like, you know, if you have like one of those science experiments where you used to put sand and pebbles and then you pour water in a bottle and you shake it all up. I feel like we're not at the point where everything is settled to the bottom of the floor of the bottle. I think there's still things they have to figure out. I still want to find out what it's going to be like for, all these West Coast teams to go play on the East Coast. I want to see what it's like for Stanford to play. And I'm not just talking about football, but like to go play a 3-game series in baseball at Georgia Tech. So I think it's very weird. And I think that's going to be a challenge for them. Who knows? It's crazy. I guess the one thing that we can be thankful for is that LSU's not going anywhere. Like, we're not moving conferences. We might be in a conference that grows, but we're a founding member of the SEC, and I don't see that. I don't see us pretty much ever leaving.
The only way
we leave is going independent, if that becomes a thing.
Because all these situations you were mentioning earlier where, you know, you had UCLA and USC wanting to go together. Then you had I forget who, like Texas and Oklahoma, is like, we're not going without them. So it's like all these bitter rivals, but they don't want to be without each other, which is really funny. But LSU doesn't really have anybody like that.
Mm-mm.
We don't have like it's do or die, you know, with them.
No. I mean, you think about it like in an alternate universe where maybe the SEC is not the strongest conference. Let's just say the Big 12 is the strongest conference, and they go after maybe Alabama is still one of the top teams in the SEC, but they're not, you know, but the conference itself is not the dominant conference. They're not going without Auburn, right? It's the same. Right. It's the same thing with us. I mean, yeah, we could, if there was a better place, we could go by ourselves. But there isn't one.
If the Cajuns ever got their act together, it could have been them. But
That or Tulane. Tulane was the rival in, like, you know, 1930.
SEC founding member.
Yeah. They played for the Tiger Rag. That's what the whole song thing is.
We talked about if anybody could get the boot from the SEC. It's happened before. Although that was a long time ago.
Well, Georgia Tech, too. Georgia Tech was in the SEC, which is, you know, Georgia and Georgia Tech were playing each other in clean old-fashioned hate, and that was a conference game, which is kind of cool, I guess. But now Georgia Tech is kind of irrelevant. Okay. Sadly, they don't even run the triple option anymore, which kind of makes – like, I wish they still did that.
Yeah. Speaking of football, I don't know, was there any noteworthy news – out of that? I know we're doing, you know, off-season workouts, looking good. We're having recruits. There's the Manning Passing Academy.
That's what I was going to mention.
Okay. Yeah. What do you guys got?
I mean, I think for me, the Manning Passing Academy is always an exciting kind of first step to football season. Means a lot for Louisiana just because it's held in Thibodaux. And you always get like it's kind of like the first look of, you know, what's your quarterback going to look like. Last year, Jaden Daniels was impressive. I think people were, you know, really excited about him from what he did. And it's like, it's always kind of weird because it's like, I mean, they're not really doing anything.
It's more of a networking event.
Yeah, it's really, I think it is, you know, you're being invited by the royalty of college football, the Mannings. Like, I don't think anybody can just show up and just be like, okay, I'm here. You know, you do have to get an invite, it seems like. And, Nussmeier was invited, you know, he's a camp counselor kind of at the Passing Academy. I watched a video of him working on technique with like a look like a 12-year-old. So that was cool. And, people were saying, I read an article, about him at the Manning Passing Academy. Of course, we've known it from when he was a high schooler at Marcus High School committing to LSU, but the arm talent is there. It's real. Is he going to be able to translate it to the field? I hope so. But we're excited about – I mean, I'm excited about it. I'm just excited to see some football on purpose.
Uh-huh. And then you mentioned other kind of news on the football. There was a few recruiting notes for LSU over the past 2 weeks, so I'll hit those real quick. So the first one was four-star cornerback Jabori Antoine, who was the number two player in Louisiana actually for 2025, has decommitted from LSU, corner from New Iberia. So not really sure what the situation is there, and not great that he's going away. It's possible that he could recommit, but that's a decent loss for LSU. And then also in the 2025 class, we did get a commitment from LaJesse Harold, who's out of Florida, edge rusher, 6'5", 220, a little bit slim for his height. But yeah, number 15 edge in the country and about a top 75 player overall. So a pretty good get there, 2025 class, which brings them to about 13 commitments for 2025, which is not too far away considering signing day is coming up in just a couple of months. So hopefully Kelly starts filling out the ranks in that regard. For the year after, 2026, we got our first two commitments. It's kind of crazy to say the year 2026. It's like a way out. But the first one was Richard Anderson, defensive lineman out of New Orleans, Edna Carr. They're always known for some mean, tough football. And number seven player, Louisiana, 6'4", 325. So big old fella already is just finishing his sophomore year. And then he was followed by another New Orleans native, Ja'Kai Anderson out of McDonough 35. So he was the number 34 safety in the country. So he's only a three-star. But yeah, always good to get in-state talent, sticking with the Tigers. Hopefully Antoine will flip back at some point. And I think that's all I had. But yeah, it's good to see that the recruiting trail still alive in the summer. They're always hosting these camps and stuff. So got to keep flying the LSU banner there.
Absolutely. And wasn't Bryce Underwood on campus again?
I believe something? He was. I saw
or was that. Or was that thinking of, oh, okay, so he did. There was some other recruits there, but he was there. I don't know. I think I even saw some videos of him throwing to people. So unless I'm confusing that with like the Elite Eight, but I could have sworn he was on campus, and you remember that too.
I think so. I saw the same. I think so.
Yeah. Okay. So, I mean, it's amazing the commitment that this guy displays. So,
yes, but we've been down this road before. There was I remember Biz another Bardo? Quarterback who, yeah, I mean, like, what's his name? I don't even remember his name anymore. who was the quarterback from Ponchatoula?
TJ Finley.
Yeah, TJ Finley was like the leader of all leaders. Remember, he was recruiting everybody and throwing to everybody. And I mean, it seemed like a nice kid, but it just never worked out for him.
I mean, just in the history of this podcast, we've had a couple come and go between Finley and Max Johnson. And then the big one, Walker Howard, who we were hyping up as like the savior of LSU quarterbacking, sat on the bench and then dipped for Ole Miss, where he's not even playing.
To go date Lane Kiffin's daughter, right?
That might be a win in itself.
I think so. I agree.
Yeah. It's probably why he transferred, but who knows?
It might have been.
Yeah.
He did because he's number three. He was like number two on the – he would have been the number two on the depth chart here, but he moved to be like number three or four on the depth chart at Ole Miss.
Right. Yeah. Leave it at that, I guess. Anything else that you guys had?
Not too
Football.
Much, I think.
Basketball otherwise.
Oh, you're talking about the quarterbacks. I wanted to do a little quick research on former quarterback Miles Brennan to see what he was up to. So he's currently working for a insurance company in the Baton Rouge area, specializing in the oil and gas construction and marine industry. So I guess as long as he got his truck, kind of sad fall from grace there. He got the short end of the stick in a lot of ways. But at least he was on the 2019 team, yes, that won national championship. Yeah, so at least you guys were in.
He won a national championship. He did, if you remember, he played almost the entire game against A&M and like had stupid numbers, if I remember correctly.
Oh, yeah, because that was really like the hype train. It was like, we're going to do it, reel it off again next year with Miles. And then
that performance against A&M, like, people were like, oh, my gosh, he's as good as Joe.
Yeah, but then he had the flip-flop accident, and it all was downhill from there.
But before the flip-flop accident, there was the – remember, he was the starter. Yeah, and he played really well that first couple games, and then he had a mysterious side injury.
Right. The abdominal – wait, no, it's a quad. No, it's somewhere in between. It's a hip flexor.
Side.
It's a hip flexor. No, it's a groin. No, it's his prostate. It's something in there.
Side. And remember when the doctor was like, I remember going into the next season. This was the season of flip-flop. Going into that season, somebody like interviewed the doctor and it was like, yeah, we talked about, and he was like, this is the first time I've ever performed. They were like, we're going to have to perform a never before done surgery on Miles Brennan because this injury is so weird.
Well, yeah, they don't even know what they're doing.
They don't even know what they're doing. And then, so they do it and he's healthy and then flip flop. He has an unfortunate issue with a flip flop and his career's over.
Sad.
Yeah. Ugh. Anyway,
but just goes to show you got to protect your side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cause I think that side is probably what led to the flip-flop thing. Cause I know he was just walking down the docks and some pelican was started flapping its wings and he like moved to the side, but that pain was still there.
The ghost when you have an amputee, and you can still feel the pain of like the
right,
you know, the amputee. Yeah, they still
phantom
pain. Yeah, you might have had phantom side pain.
Probably.
Maybe we should get him on the podcast to discuss his side.
Right. Along with a licensed physician to explain it. Maybe a psychic to go over the ethereal aspects of it. Anywho, yeah. We're going off the rails here, but that's what happens in the summer. Yeah. I think that was most of what we had to talk about. Feel free to stop me, but we'll definitely follow up in a couple weeks. Nothing probably is going to happen in between then, but we're still going to have something for you folks as we get closer to the beginning of the fall, the new expanded SEC conference football schedule, including your Tigers, because you know we've got to talk about what the season's going to look like, who we got, expectations. I know Garrett Nussmeier was asked this week, you know, do you, you know, because well, he was the backup to the guy that just won the Heisman, so they're asking him about that. He's like, I don't even care. I'm here for a championship, which is great. It's what you want to hear. Got a lot of stuff to get into, a lot of prognosticating. So bring your best in 2 weeks, because that's what we'll do, I guess. But until then, I don't know. Do you guys have any final thoughts? Oh, the Olympics. Won't the Olympics? No, that's not until the 26th of July. I'm sorry. So we got a little ways before that. I was going to say, I think there might be some Tigers in the Olympics, but we'll cross that bridge when we get to it.
Yeah, I think that's it. Yep. Looking forward to that, and then football in 2 months.
Exactly. So until next time, stay safe. Have a great 4th of July, everybody. Happy Independence Day. And stay safe, of course. Stay tuned, because we will see you on the flip side. And until next time, have a great holiday. And we'll talk to you next time on Talking Ticks.